Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's the Alex Jones Show live on this Friday, March 25th, 2011. I'll be your fill-in host for the first half of this show today. My name's Paul Joseph Watson, editor and writer for PrisonPlanet.com. And in the second half of the show, your host will be none other than the Health Ranger, Mike Adams. So be sure not to miss that. Of course, we're streaming live at PrisonPlanet.tv. We'll be taking your calls at the bottom of the hour. And in the next hour, I'll be talking to Dr. Christopher Busby, who is a preeminent nuclear and radiation expert, about the deepening crisis in Fukushima. And that's where we'll start our news coverage today. Because for the past week, the mass media has been obsessing about the death of Elizabeth Taylor and a myriad of other distractions. Of course, the attack on Libya has taken center stage. We'll discuss that later. But there's been a kind of stupefied mass apathy cultivated by the establishment media as part of this bizarre campaign to convince the global population that the Fukushima crisis is all but over, when in fact it's deepening day by day. Now, according to The New Scientist and the Austrian Central Institute for Meteorology and Geodynamics in Vienna, radiation levels being spewed by Fukushima now rival those emitted by the Chernobyl disaster. And of course, the catastrophe shows no sign of coming to an end. It rumbles on day after day. And of course, the news today, reactor core may be breached at damaged Fukushima plant. Bloomberg News, Japan's nuclear regulator said one reactor core at the quake-damaged Fukushima power plant may be cracked and leaking radiation. Quote, it's very possible that there has been some kind of leak at the number three reactor, Hidehiko Nishima, a spokesman at the Japan Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency, said in Tokyo today. While radioactive water at the unit most likely escaped from the reactor core, it also could have originated from spent fuel pools stored atop the reactor, he said. And so what the mainstream media is reticent to report is the fact that reactor number three, which is the one that was hit, you'll remember, by that massive fireball explosion we saw on March 14th, is the reactor that contains the deadly MOX plutonium-uranium mix that is in none of the other reactors there at the site. And so your Geiger counters and your EPA radiation detectors are just not going to pick up this mix of plutonium and uranium. And this is what we'll be talking to Chris Busby about later in the show. It's the most deadly form of radiation, and it's also invisible to all these detectors that they're using to tell us that everything's going to be okay. Now, I wrote an article about this yesterday, which you can read. Plutonium is the most deadly radioactive isotope known to man. And indeed, MOX is 2 million times more deadly than normal enriched uranium. The half-life of plutonium-239 is 24,000 years. And just a few milligrams of P239 escaping in a smoke plume can contaminate soil for tens of thousands of years. Now, this stuff, you know, if this stuff leaks out in significant dosages, you can forget about your potassium iodide. It's a different monster altogether. But I'm sure, again, that the EPA and the CDC will continue to tell Americans that everything's fine and that there's nothing to worry about, just as the children who splashed about in the yellow rain puddles in the days after Chernobyl were told the same thing in Ukraine, Belarus and surrounding countries. We'll be back to cover the deepening Fukushima crisis on the Alex Jones Show after the break. Stay tuned.
We'll be right back. Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
It's Paul Joseph Watson filling in for Alex Jones today on this Friday, March 25th edition. Apple rejects iPhone 4 radiation metering app. Citing a lack of interest, Apple has rejected an app that allows users to see a meter showing how much radiation is being given off by their iPhone in real time. The app, previously praised by Apple for its clever engineering and creative design, is reported to have been rejected by Steve Jobs himself. Israeli developer Torcon admitted the app, submitted the app on multiple occasions to the App Store, only to have repeated denials. An email from Steve Jobs gave a short two-word explanation as to why the app wouldn't see approval. Quote, no interest. Oh, okay. So potassium iodide is completely sold out, exhausted. You can't buy it anywhere. Geiger counters, can't buy them anywhere. They're sold out. But now Steve Jobs is telling us that there's, quote, no interest in an iPhone app that purports to measure radiation. So again, the message is clear. Everything is under control. And now US health authorities are actually encouraging people not to take potassium iodide, even in weaker doses. And even as the Fukushima radiation continues to be spewed out of the plant. So 25 years after they told us Chernobyl was harmless, remember, the Russians didn't even admit to it until 2 days later when engineers in Sweden measured the radiation. And we've been told that, you know, it's of no concern. Don't take your potassium iodide. Don't get your Geiger counters. And yet, in Europe, since Chernobyl 25 years ago, we've had nearly a million cancer deaths in Europe attributed to the disaster, according to the latest studies. And in fact, there's a new study that's just been put out by the US National Institutes of Health, the NIH, which states, quote, nearly 25 years after the accident at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in Ukraine, exposure to radioactive iodine 131 from fallout may be responsible for the thyroid cancers that are still occurring amongst people who lived in the Chernobyl area and were children or adolescents at the time of the accident. And so, just like the kids in Belarus who were told that splashing about in yellow radioactive puddles was perfectly safe because it was, quote, pollen. Now we have Tokyo being bathed in this same yellow rain. And just like the victims of Chernobyl, they're being told the same thing, that it's pollen. Well, for their sake, I hope it is, but everything about this disaster, from the cover-ups about the safety of the plant before the disaster, to the ongoing deception about the radiation levels in surrounding areas. Remember, in the two prefectures surrounding Fukushima, they won't even divulge what the radiation levels are. It clearly indicates that they're not to be trusted, which is why people in Tokyo have emptied the shelves of bottled water even after the authorities said it was now safe to drink again. And again, the whole lack of trust only creates a vacuum that is then filled with alarm and panic, which is why we've been trying to get accurate information so people can make the right decisions. It's why we've been talking to people like Busby and Bowman on the Alex Jones Show over the past 2 weeks. But what really galls me is not just the likes of Ann Coulter claiming that, you know, radiation is nutritious. And again, the offer is still on the table, an all expenses paid trip to Fukushima for Ann Coulter if she still thinks that, you know, radioactive iodine, cesium and plutonium are healthy and nutritious. The offer's on the table, not being accepted yet. But what gets me is the self-proclaimed environmentalists, the people who, you know, scream bloody murder all day long about man-made climate change devastating the planet. But then when a real environmental catastrophe occurs, like plutonium releases that can make soil infertile for 24,000 years, something to be worried about, you'd think. you know, it's all fine and dandy. And it proves that they don't really give a damn about the environment. They're only interested in the environment when they can use it to demonize the likes of carbon dioxide emissions, because they know it's the lifeblood of a free and prosperous society. And specifically, I'm talking about George Monbiot, who writes for The Guardian. Now, Monbiot is Britain's foremost eco-control freak. He's the environmentalist icon for a whole generation of deluded, ignorant leftists who think they're saving Mother Earth by picking up a copy of The Guardian and reading his article. And what did Monbiot write in The Guardian in response to the Fukushima disaster? He wrote a story entitled, "Why Fukushima Made Me Stop Worrying and Love Nuclear Power." And in this article, he says that critics of the nuclear industry have, quote, wildly exaggerated the dangers of radioactive pollution. So this is a self-proclaimed environmentalist saying that radioactive pollution, which makes the soil infertile for 24,000 years, is nothing to worry about. And that quote is going to come back to haunt him in light of the fact that we now have Reactor 3 spewing this MOX uranium-plutonium mix. But here's another quote from the article. "As a result of the disaster at Fukushima, I am no longer nuclear neutral. I now support the technology," writes Monbiot. So God forbid should anyone point out the dangers of, you know, catastrophes that can devastate whole regions, make them environmentally inhabitable for decades. Radiation that causes nearly a million people to get cancer in the case of Chernobyl, and fertility rates in Europe plunging through the floor as a result of the fallout. No, according to Monbiot, the real threat is those smokestacks emitting the harmless life-giving gas CO2. So I ask Monbiot, how many people have coal plants killed? How many rivers and fields of coal plants turned into radioactive swamps, as the regions around Chernobyl were in 1986? And yet here's Monbiot, you know, lauding the virtues of nutritious plutonium like Ann Coulter and saying that we need more of it, if only to stop the construction of those dastardly clean-burning coal plants that, God forbid, should allow the scum human population to keep their evil automobiles fueled without going bankrupt, with the gas prices going through the roof because of oil going up day by day, with the Obama administration's publicly admitted war on the coal plant industry. And of course, the blackouts in recent months attributed to that in no small part. So George Monbiot has basically confirmed his position as the ultimate eco-hypocrite and proved once again that these people don't give a damn about real environmental catastrophes if they can't exploit them for their own control freak ends. And, you know, Monbiot is the same moron who claims that islands like Tuvalu are completely inhabited due to man-made climate change when, you know, the real population in the case of Tuvalu has doubled over the past three decades, and yet you've got Monbiot and the likes of the UNIPCC claiming that they're completely deserted because the sea levels have overrun them. Again, a total pack of lies. When these people want to exploit something for their own agenda, it's a real environmental catastrophe, even if it's completely made up. But when there actually is a real environmental catastrophe, like Fukushima, they're not interested. And in fact, Monbiot is applauding it. He's saying we need more Fukushima plants. We need more nutritious plutonium in the atmosphere. But we're going to get into that more in the next hour with Chris Busby, and I'm going to try and get him to address Monbiot's article in The Guardian, because I think Busby was in fact on the Green Party in Britain, so he probably knows quite a bit about Monbiot, so I'm going to try and get his reaction to that. But we need to move on now. We'll get back into Fukushima and talk about the attack on Libya and the ongoing globalist agenda to hijack revolutions so they can re-engineer the entire Middle East. And I want to take your calls on this also after the bottom of the hour, which we'll get to. Because now, of course, they've managed to con the world into accepting the lie that they're attacking Libya to protect, quote, protesters. Remember, right at the start of this, the media called them protesters, which is funny because I can't really remember seeing too many protesters that drive tanks and fly fighter jets. I don't know about you. Not something I've seen quite often when there's a protest occurring. And naturally, of course, it has nothing whatsoever to do with the claims of protecting the people from the Gaddafi reign of terror. It's about supporting one side in a civil war. And it's got nothing to do with a humanitarian intervention. These are the same people that told us Kuwaiti babies were being tossed out of incubators by Iraqi soldiers. These are the same people that told us Bosnians were being incarcerated in Serbian Nazi-style concentration camps. As we've proven, completely fraudulent, completely contrived, completely made up. But they always need an emotional trigger, a selling point on which to base the foundation of any, quote, humanitarian war. But what's it really all about? It's about keeping the taps open for this wave of hijacked revolutions in the Middle East to continue to flood the region. And now we're seeing open calls for an attack on Syria. And we'll get into that after the break on The Alex Jones Show, live at prisonplanet.tv. Stay tuned.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end.
Welcome back on The Alex Jones Show, Friday, March 25th, 2011. I'm Paul Joseph Watson, filling in for Alex today. And in the second half of the broadcast, you'll be able to see Mike Adams, the editor of naturalnews.com, in studio, going through the latest health news and, of course, taking your calls. We'll also be taking your calls after the bottom of the hour at 800-259-9231. That's 800-259-9231. And, of course, at the top of the hour, I'll be joined by Dr. Chris Busby, nuclear and radiation expert, to talk about the deepening crisis in Fukushima. So, if the globalists can't get this domino to drop in Libya, it's going to be a lot harder for them to overthrow the next Middle Eastern country. And now we know, of course, who the next target of this regime change will be. And it's Syria. US Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who, remember, days before the bombardment of Libya, was caught joking about the plan to attack the country on camera, has now made it clear that Assad is the next target for the US military-industrial complex. And of course, as we know, Syria has been one of the primary targets for regime change on behalf of the PNAC neocons for over a decade. And now they're getting ready to exploit this wave of hijacked revolutions as their prime opportunity. Financial Times reports today, Gates calls for Syrian forces to move aside. Syria should follow Egypt's lead, and the Syrian army should, quote, empower a revolution, Robert Gates, U.S. Secretary of Defense, argued, as thousands marched in a southern city. Mr. Gates made his comments, some of the toughest remarks to date by a U.S. official, about the rule of Bashar al-Assad, Syria's president, on a day of further upheaval in the Middle East and beyond. So now we've got the U.S. defense, that's defense secretary, calling for a revolution in a Middle Eastern country. Now, if you care to scratch one inch under the surface, just as happened with Egypt, the kind of people behind this latest faux revolution are the very same characters we saw getting rid of Mubarak there in Egypt. And we've got an article posted on prisonplanet.com today by Tony Cartolucci, which goes through this in detail. And he writes, a prominent Syrian opposition figure says the country is, quote, a bomb ready to explode as protesters demand freedom and an end to President Bashar al-Assad's cancerous regime, reports Australia's ABC News. This prominent Syrian opposition figure is, quote, human rights activist Haitham Maleh of the Human Rights Association of Syria, recently released from a Syrian prison. Haitham Maleh and Mohammed al-Hassani, another activist whose plight is being used to stir up unrest, both received pro bono legal services from the CFR-stacked Freedom Now organization. Freedom Now receives funding from the Moriah Fund, the Lantos Foundation, which includes Israeli President Shimon Peres, as an advisor, Real Networks Foundation, which also funds Democracy Now!, and the Charles Bronfman Prize, which proclaims on its website, quote, Jewish values, global impact. Freedom Now! Also receives pro bono legal support from the Pillsbury Law Firm, a CFR corporate member. So once again, just as with Egypt, we see these Soros and Brzezinski and CFR-linked globalist foundations behind the so-called revolutionaries. As Cartolucci writes, once again, we see an entire movement fomented and propelled by Western-backed opposition in tandem with a corporate-owned media. This is all part of the now irrefutable larger plot consuming the Middle East and Northern Africa. And speaking of Northern Africa, take Egypt, for example. I mean, to suggest that there's been a revolution in Egypt is beyond comprehension. There's been no revolution whatsoever. You've got two presidential candidates waiting to take over, one of which is this Arab League yes man, and the other of which is the ultimate globalist stooge linked with Brzezinski and Soros, El Baradei. Meanwhile, the same army that backed Mubarak is still exercising ruthless control over the population with an iron fist. Where's the revolution? The post-revolution administration in Egypt that, you know, the globalists and the mass media are so enamored with, and they're upholding it as this glorious example for democracy in the rest of the Middle East, have just passed a law that makes protest illegal. And now they're beating and raping women protesters Abu Ghraib style. And the globalists and the mass media love it because that's how they roll. We'll be back after break to talk more about it on The Alex Jones Show. We're back on The Alex Jones Show with me, Paul Joseph Watson. So, the wonderful post-revolutionary administration in Egypt has just passed a law banning protest. The army in Egypt, who are now in control, were just caught raping and torturing female Egyptians who were involved in the protest to oust Mubarak. And we're talking about stuff worse than Abu Ghraib. You know, beatings, torture, rape of the very activists who were at the forefront of the protest to oust Mubarak over his so-called brutality. Now they're getting a taste of something a lot worse. So it's perfectly understandable why the US military industrial complex and the media industrial complex is completely in love with this post-Egypt revolutionary government. I mean, protest is illegal. Anyone that protests is tortured and raped. And, you know, it's very democratic, and it's surely a great example for the rest of the Middle East to follow. And so then we turn to Libya. And contrary to the propaganda that, you know, people everywhere are rejoicing and welcoming the airstrikes with glee, we've got Muslims in Sri Lanka today rioting and stamping on effigies of Obama to protest against this attack, which of course was sold on the foundation of three massive lies. A, the no-fly zone. I mean, if you've ever heard a more Orwellian term, then be sure to tell me about it, because, you know, Orwell's literally rolling in his grave as we speak. No-fly zone, it means you can't fly over the country unless you're in a French, British or American fighter jet dropping bombs on the country. So, you know, just a no-fly zone. And, of course, all the Liberals applauded it with glee. No-fly zone, you know, very democratic, very humanitarian. Of course, nothing more than a euphemism for an aggressive bombing campaign that's now into its sixth, seventh day. The second lie, the great lie on this, on which this war was sold, that there would be no boots on the ground. That's what the UN resolution said, no invasion force. When it's documented that SAS and US Special Forces were in the country weeks before the resolution. And look at this headline from today's Daily Mail. 350 British Special Forces already deep inside Libya and more are ready to be deployed. Squadron of SAS and SBS troops have been in the country for a month. Oh, have they now? That'll be before the actual resolution for a no-fly zone with no boots on the ground was passed. Hundreds of British troops have been deployed inside Libya targeting Colonel Gaddafi's forces. Oh, really? I thought it was to protect the protesters. And more are on standby. While Chancellor George Osborne repeated that UK ground troops would not be involved, the Daily Mail can reveal there are an estimated 350 already mounting covert operations. So, no boots on the ground turns out to be another pack of lies. Could you have anticipated it? You know, but I'm sure those SAS boys who were there a month ago are just there to protect the protesters in their tanks and fighter jets. And the third massive lie on which this, quote, humanitarian war was based is that, the claim that it was a humanitarian mission. That's why they sent hundreds of troops in a month ago whose training solely revolves around killing people and training others to kill people. But I forgot, again, they're just protesters. Right, just got to get that into my head. And so if it's just a humanitarian mission, why were 350 SAS troops on the ground a month ago? And now we have this headline out of Sky News. US may supply Gaddafi rebels with weapons. Western diplomatic sources have confirmed to Sky News that the US is considering the legality of arming the Libyan rebels. Now, of course, again, around a month ago, at the same time as those SAS troops were going in Bloomberg News, Hillary Clinton basically admitted that they were already arming the Libyan rebels, not protesters. And we featured an article earlier this week from Tony Cartolucci about how they were already arming the rebels through Egypt. So again, everything that they prepare the public to accept, they're already doing it. SAS troops have already been there for a month. They've already been arming the rebels. Why do you think they've got, you know, car boots full of rocket-propelled grenade launchers? They're already being armed. But again, they're just protesters, just protecting the people. Now, of course, we have the same groups in Libya at the moment working against Gaddafi. And again, Gaddafi's a monster, but compared to what these people are going to get, you ain't seen nothing yet. And of course, they're the same people who worked with Osama bin Laden to try and assassinate Gaddafi in 1996. Paid for, of course, by the CIA and MI6, $100,000 wire to bin Laden and al-Qaeda to help them get rid of Gaddafi 15 years ago. And now these groups that helped them do that are the same forces who want to impose draconian Sharia law in Libya. So we have the rampant hypocrisy of both the left and the right amongst those who support this war. On the right, you have people supporting the airstrikes who just a few months ago were screaming bloody murder at Muslims trying to build a mosque in Ground Zero in New York, when the people that they now support through their support of these airstrikes are the very people who want to impose a draconian extremist Muslim dictatorship in Libya. So all those so-called conservative right-wingers who love this war, they're actually supporting the radical Al-Qaeda Muslims, which is why the Libyan al-Qaeda leader, has come out over a week ago and gave his complete approval for the airstrikes, said he wants to get rid of Gaddafi, which is why you had the London Telegraph article headlined "The West and al-Qaeda on the same side," just as they were on the same side with Bill Clinton in Serbia, and just as they were on the same side when MI6 and CIA paid bin Laden and al-Qaeda $100,000 to assassinate Gaddafi in 1996. Now, they're giving it another go as part of this effort to continue the domination of the Middle East via these regime changes, which are nothing more than aggressive coup d'etats sold as humanitarian lies. And then on the flip side, you've got the left, who are, you know, bought the humanitarian pretext, hook, line and sinker, completely ignorant of the fact that when these rebels do come to power, if they do, they're going to impose a doctrine that will ensure total persecution of women and all minorities in the country. And it's basically going to make Gaddafi look like Nelson Mandela in comparison. And yet all these, you know, liberal humanitarians are graciously applauding it. And again, the globalists will love it because that's how they roll. They like to prop up extremist regimes and install them so they can later have the excuse to overthrow them, just as what we saw in Iran. And again, the likes of the BBC and the mass media will applaud and cheer at the liberation of Libyans while they, like the Egyptians, are now being subjected to, are basically completely enslaved as their country becomes nothing more than an oil fiefdom for the New World Order. And again, Israel this week bombed Gaza, injured dozens and killed children. We don't see any calls for a humanitarian intervention there, do we? The Predator drone strikes that Barack Obama has aggressively increased after he replaced Bush kill 90% innocent people, according to the Brookings Institute. And yet, we don't see any humanitarian concern surrounding that situation, do we? So again, complete bluster, complete hypocrisy. Again, another war in the Middle East based on lies. It's about arming and supporting one side in a civil war has absolutely nothing to do with humanitarianism. I'm going to go to some of your calls now, and the first caller is Mike in New York. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. I'm an info warrior, and I'm going to contribute to the info war right now. Everybody needs to go to republicforTheUnitedStates.org. You're going to see that before the Civil War, you had the South walk out of Congress. When Lincoln came back, he could not get a quorum together, okay? In 1871, the United States Corporation was created. They were given jurisdiction only in Washington, D.C. I want everybody, please, and you, Paul, please, look at this information, comment on it, and maybe write an article on it. It was very important. Oh.
Okay, thanks for the call. Gator in North Carolina, you're on the air, Gator.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind today?
Yeah, I just want to call and share with you. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Army and the United States Marine Corps, and I just been speaking a lot with sheriffs in the county surrounding the area. I live here in North Carolina, and I travel a lot. I'm a member of the media, and I travel and fly extensively. And I, when they started the Speedos protest at TSA some months ago, and have yet, thank God, to go through a full body scanner or to receive a pat down. But I'm constantly in talk with military people and law enforcement of all ranks and sizes all over the country as I go about my business. And couple of things that brought in some good clarification for me I'd like to share with you and everybody else is, you know, there's a lot of people under the illusion that the military and law enforcement, that there's going to be a mass amount of people that will side with freedom and liberty and truth when, you know, push comes to shove. And I just wanted to dispel that illusion. A conversation I had 2 days ago with the second in command at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. I called him in regards to the report of the Marines being sent out to Libya, and I asked him about that, and I asked him from a Universal Code of Military Justice standpoint, which requires Marines to stand down against illegal orders. Now, I was asking him, how could he, in good conscience, having sworn to defend the Constitution, send troops to Libya, which was obviously an illegal order being that, you know, Obama, of course, bypassed Congress and went and had a unilateral attack on Libya under the auspices of the United Nations. And Sergeant Major refused at all to even mention the word U.S. Constitution. He refused to engage me in any kind of intelligent conversation. And he just said that, look, I've got a commander-in-chief. I do whatever the commander-in-chief says. I told him he was a traitor and a coward, and he was a domestic enemy of the Constitution by failing to uphold his duties as a Marine and resist illegal orders. And I just wanted to leave you with that. And I spoke to another recruit just out of basic. And I handed him a copy of the Constitution and Bill of Rights, and he said he's never read it in his life. And, of course, they no longer teach the Constitution in any shape, form, or fashion in the military. But I appreciate you giving me time.
Okay, thanks for the call. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's precisely what leads to the disturbing and grisly photos that came out this week of these US kill teams in Afghanistan that just go out and murder kids and then pose with them as trophies. I mean, what kind of training are they being given that leads to that kind of behavior? And as he said, now we've got to talk of Marines out of Camp Lejeune going out to Libya to support the rebels in the civil war. Again, no authorization by Congress. Ron Paul's pointed that out. And not only that, it will be a direct violation of their own UN resolution, which said no boots on the ground, you know, no occupying forces, even though, as I just explained, the SAS has been there for a month. And now we have this article out of WCTI, Camp Lejeune Marines to Libya to strike at Gaddafi forces. We've seen Camp Lejeune Marines in Iraq and Afghanistan, and now they are joining the fight against Libya. Okay, I thought it was a no-fly zone. Now it's a fight against Libya. Okay. About 2,200 Marines from the 26th Marine Expeditionary Unit will take part in support operations based aboard USS Kearsarge at sea. Those support operations have thus far included airstrikes and one rescue operation. The overall mission is to help end the violence directed at the Libyan people. Okay, that'll be why when the US fighter jet crash landed in that field, the first thing that the US chopper did was shoot at six of the civilians who were trying to, you know, help the pilot. So they're really, really interested in stopping the violence against the Libyan people there. Quote, in Libya right now, they are doing exactly what we need them to do. They are doing what they are told. And right now, that's protecting Libyan people against Gaddafi forces. So again, as the caller said, they're just doing what they're told, despite the fact that it is a complete violation of the Constitution that they swore an oath on to protect and defend. And it's even a violation of their own stupid, ridiculous, pointless UN resolution. Linda in California, you're on the air. Go ahead, Linda.
The reason they're doing this is the economic crisis they've been telling us about. And so the Constitution does it no good, because an economic crisis is driven by Parkinson's law, which is to increase jobs. And a Constitution may work when an economy is really doing well and can afford to enforce it once in a while. And even then, it's great. Squeeze votes. Unless we know the reason.
Okay, you've got a bad line there. We'll have to move on. Horskin in Texas, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. The death industry worldwide is not only is Israel bombing Gaza to kill Palestinian babies, continually ignored by our lockstep media, but right here, well over 50% of all black babies conceived in the United States are murdered in the womb last year, as we all know who listen to Alex Jones. And ageism against the youngest and the oldest among us is the most insipid stench of bigotry in my mind. The unborn are not even recognized for their humanity. They are instead torn to bits, chemically dissolved, or used in some bizarre experiment to supposedly somehow serve the interests of us, the adults. Now, these non-productive consumers, the old and disabled, are nightmarishly discarded like yesterday's newspaper and any and all forms of socialized medicine in the Sotero Health scam. And that's right, cost savings from death. It's the common theme throughout the slimy Sotero death scare spasm and, you know, Kenyan-born Indonesian subject, illegal alien, thus ineligible, so-called president, so-called Barack Obama, i.e. Barry Sotero, is a stooge. A stooge for the evil banking cartel of killers that greedily rules our world through the so-called Federal Reserve and the IMF, etc. So I'm just urging people to learn more by visiting ronpaul.org or, of course, here at Infowars.com, lewrockwell.com. And so there's lots of sources of really good information out there. And thanks to you, you're always doing a great job. I really appreciate your professionalism and great ideas, sir. And I'm really happy to be able to share some ideas about this death spasm that we're going through here in this country. We're so angry at supposedly at Gaddafi or whomever for whatever minimal death that might come from his world. But we have an industry here. We're doing it all day, every day. And in fact, here in Austin, Texas, it's not only the live music capital of the known universe, it's the death capital of Texas. We're the only county, Travis County, the only county that forces taxpayers to pay for other people to have abortions. The only county in Texas where taxpayer funds are stolen to do this horrible act.
Okay, thanks for the call. I've got to go to the break now. We'll be back with more of your calls. Stay tuned.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still.
Friday, March 25th, it's the Alex Jones Show Live. I'm filling in for Alex today. Paul Joseph Watson in the second half of the broadcast. It will be Mike Adams, the editor of naturalnews.com. And any of your calls that I don't get to, Mike will be taking them in the second half of the show, of course, because we've got Dr. Christopher Busby coming up in the next segment to talk about Fukushima. George in Connecticut, you're on the air. Go ahead, George.
I'm going to talk to Busby, is this going to be passed on? Because he was on another radio station and talked about the possibility that there were upwards to a million deaths from Chernobyl alone over the decades. And I think he had problems with the translation of the Russian material. That's one of the reasons why the numbers are not fully compiled. But also I think this should be also translated into Japanese if there's anybody out there to help out on that too, so that they're aware of what's going on.
Yeah, that's something that I'm going to ask Busby about, because regarding Chernobyl, of course, the UN figures and the World Health Organization figures, actually there was a UN report in 2005 that claimed that there were no birth defects as a result of Chernobyl in the Ukraine. And the UN and WHO figures have routinely underplayed the cancer deaths as a result of Chernobyl. They say that 200,000 were sickened by Chernobyl and that only 9,000 died of cancer. But as you mentioned, the latest research carried out by the Russian environmental policy, which was published by the New York Academy of Sciences, has all this evidence which has not been translated into English, and it clearly indicates that there have been almost a million cancer deaths in the past 25 years as a direct result of Chernobyl. And that's something that I'm going to ask Dr. Busby about directly and get his take on that, because we know that the radiation levels in the surrounding prefectures at Fukushima are basically being covered up by the authorities. Now we've got this leak in reactor 3 with the plutonium MOX uranium mix, and it's the crisis is only getting worse. But the Geiger counters and the radiation detectors being used by the EPA are just not going to pick this stuff up. So that's something that we're going to explore further in the next hour. Mohammed in Canada, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey.
Yes, go ahead.
You hear me all right?
Yeah, what's on your mind today?
Okay, I'm calling. I'm just talking about, I was just going back to what you're talking about, Olivia. I think the media has created the paradigm. They created the discussion, and I think everybody's eating it up, and I think we need to look beyond. They're playing the same game. We just got to look beyond, like, the language they're using, beyond, like, you know, no flies on all this. We can't just take it for what they're giving it to us. We got to look deeper as citizens into what is really going on, if we actually do care about what's going on in our world today.
Well, exactly. Most people initially bought the lie that it was just a no-fly zone. They soon became acquainted with what it really was. Six constant nights of bombardment, But of course, it's all to protect the protesters that have RPGs, tanks, and fighter jets. They're just protecting the people there. Thanks for the call. Patrick in Kansas, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Paul. I'm calling and wanting to know about information about the big pharma side of the globalists. And I watched this documentary on...
I'll tell you what, you'd be better off talking to Mike Adams because he is, of course, the health ranger and the expert on all matters big pharma. So I'm sure if you call back in when Mike is on, you'll be able to discuss that with him. But coming up after the break, we've got nuclear and radiation expert Dr. Christopher Busby on the deepening crisis in Fukushima. It's the Alex Jones Show Live. Stay tuned, don't go away.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Friday, March 25th, 2011. It's Paul Joseph Watson filling in for Alex Jones today. And in the second half of the broadcast, the editor of naturalnews.com, Mike Adams, will be taking your calls. But for the next half an hour, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Christopher Busby, who is one of the preeminent experts on nuclear fallout and radiation. He was the scientific secretary of the European Committee on Radiation Risks and has held numerous influential positions in this field. And of course, in the aftermath of Fukushima, his expertise has been very much in demand, with Busby appearing on the BBC and numerous other TV and radio shows. Dr. Busby, welcome to the show today.
Yes, hello.
Hello, good to speak to you. And let's get straight into it because, of course, massive news on Fukushima today. Japanese authorities admitting that reactor number 3, which is the reactor that contains this MOX plutonium-uranium mix, has been breached and is now leaking water at radiation levels 10,000 times above the level of normal reactor water. Now, according to my understanding, Dr. Busby, these plutonium particles can't even be measured with the standard equipment they're using to provide the background radiation levels which people in Fukushima and surrounding areas are going by. So how much does this new breach, this new crack in reactor number 3 represent a deepening of the crisis at Fukushima?
Well, I think personally that this is not something new. What is new is that they've admitted it. I mean, it's not as if they came along one morning and said, oh, look, there's a crack in the reactor. Gosh, I didn't see that before. Yeah, I wonder what happened. Must be the mice. I mean, this must have happened when the thing exploded ages ago. So it's quite clear that this is just the same as Chernobyl, that what happens is that they let the information out slowly for whatever reason, and eventually they have to concede that there are these massive problems. Yes, well, the answer is it's a nightmare. The whole thing is a nightmare. But it was quite clear that it was a nightmare to those of us who understood these things more or less from the beginning. And you're quite right that these plutonium particles are extremely serious, and also uranium particles, I have to say. And they can't be measured easily with Geiger counters. They're not detectable. You need a special sort of scintillation counter to detect them. And I expect they have these. But when they say that the dose rate is so many microsieverts per hour, it doesn't really include the doses from these particles. And, of course, in any case, these doses from the particles are internal doses, so you can't really measure them. You can only find out afterwards that there's been a problem.
And that's basically what my next question was regarding the explosion. We saw this massive explosion affect reactor number 3 nearly 2 weeks ago now on March 14th with this huge orange fireball and this debris shooting up hundreds of feet into the air. And for 2 weeks they told us that the containment facility was undamaged, and yet now this morning they suddenly announced, well, yes, it is cracked and it is leaking. So... you're saying that they probably knew it was cracked 2 weeks ago, nearly after that explosion, and that they've just been covering up the fact.
I think they could have figured that out quite easily. And I have to say that not only not telling the people, but also all of the pundits that come onto the radio programs that are wheeled out by the nuclear industry and their supporters, all those people who say there's no problem, don't worry, it's the same as going on a flight to New York, and all of this stuff, those people are criminally irresponsible, because people could have got away, you know, they could have taken some sort of measures to reduce their radiation exposure if they'd have thought that these things were dangerous. But to leave it 2 weeks and then say, oh, well, it's much worse than we thought, means that people will certainly die as a result of this kind of disinformation. And I have to say that in a court of law, that kind of disinformation from an expert in a court case would result in the expert being prosecuted and perhaps being sent to
jail. Stay there, we'll be back after the break with Dr. Christopher Busby on the unfolding.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
It's Paul Joseph Watson filling in for Alex today on this Friday, 25th of March edition. We're talking to nuclear expert Dr. Christopher Busby about the unfolding crisis in Fukushima. Doctor, we had a call in the last hour who basically wanted to know something that I already planned to ask you, which is, we've got these comparisons constantly being made to Fukushima with Chernobyl, and I'm interested in knowing where you place Chernobyl in terms of the scale of the disaster that occurred in 1986, and of course its aftermath, in comparison with Fukushima, because we've had differing reports. We had a UN report in 2005 that basically poo-pooed any idea of birth and reproductive effects in the victims of Chernobyl in Ukraine. And then we've had consistent numbers from the UN and the WHO which say that Chernobyl only caused 9,000 cancer deaths in the region affected, which of course completely contradicts more recent studies such as this Center for Russian and Environmental Policy study, which was published by the New York Academy of Sciences, which gives a figure of almost a million cancer deaths in the last 25 years as a direct result of Chernobyl. So, I mean, where do you place Chernobyl in terms of disaster in comparison to Fukushima?
Okay, well, there are two questions really there. The first is, was Chernobyl a disaster, and how many people have died as a result of it? And the second is, how does Fukushima compare to Chernobyl? Well, we start with the first one, which is the Chernobyl question. The million deaths that have been put out by Alexei Yablokov and his colleagues in that document that you mentioned, which was published by the prestigious New York Academy of Sciences and has been peer-reviewed, is almost certainly correct, and in fact I think is probably conservative. I would say that on the basis of the research I've done, which is quite a lot of research, and I have been working with Alexei Yablokov on this too, I would say that it's probably more than a million as a result of Chernobyl in Europe and in the ex-Soviet Union territories. So that's the first thing. And it's easy to show that. There are lots and lots of peer-reviewed papers. Now, when the United Nations and the International Atomic Energy Agency and the WHO talk, they ignore all of the scientific papers which say that, which show that there are these deaths. So they just select the numbers of scientific papers, the ones that agree with them, and they ignore all of the others. So that's how it works. And the WHO, I have to say, signed an agreement with the International Atomic Energy Agency in 1959 to leave research on the health effects of radionuclides to the IAEA, whose remit is the development of nuclear power. So this is a terrible bias. Now, the second question. So, all right, so Chernobyl was very serious, and it caused lots of deaths. Second question is, where does Fukushima lie in this? Now, I have to say that Fukushima is probably going to be worse, although slightly different. And Fukushima is unfolding now, so we don't know the end of it. But the IAEA themselves, who are not renowned for telling the truth or for being very direct about this, have already published in their various bulletins the levels of contamination at different distances from the Fukushima plant. It's all on the internet. You can see all this. And the latest bulletin, which was published today, says contamination on the ground out to 32 kilometers has been measured at almost 5 megabecquerels per square meter. Now, that is actually 10 times higher than the Chernobyl exclusion zone. So that's the first thing you have to say, is that out to 30 kilometers, and the Chernobyl exclusion zone is 30 kilometers, so they're strictly comparable, the Fukushima contamination is 10 times higher per square meter. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is that the contamination out to 78 kilometers, also published by the UN, is 1 megabecquerels per square meter, or as high as, and so that is twice as high as the level in the Chernobyl exclusion zone, where everybody was, you will recall, where the Soviet authorities, after 3 days, evacuated everybody. Now, we are now 2 weeks from the beginning of this, and people certainly haven't been evacuated in the areas where the contamination is coming down. And the reason why is because there are just too many people and there's nowhere to put them. So with Chernobyl, the nearest large area of the nearest large city was Kiev in the Ukraine. But luckily, the radiation went north and it went northwest, and so it didn't really go over Kiev to any large extent. But here we have radiation going south, and we've plotted all of this on the big computer of the NOAA, the American computer which plots particle movements. And it's quite easy to show that this stuff from Fukushima, this radioactivity from Fukushima, all these particles and the iodine and the cesium and the plutonium and the uranium and the tellurium 132 and all of these isotopes are going to Tokyo, which has a population of 36 million. As I understand it, it's the largest concentration of human beings in any city on Earth. So this is why Fukushima is so bad. First of all, there's more contamination in the area, and secondly, it's sitting right on top of a very large population center, and also, you know, of course, it'll get spread around as people move away, as they drive out of the area, as the airplanes fly away from Tokyo and land in other countries. People will be carrying the radioactivity with them. Worse, then, is the short answer.
That's quite harrowing to hear, but still on Chernobyl, I mean, in the days following Chernobyl, children in Belarus were told that, you know, splashing around in puddles of yellow rain was perfectly harmless because it was merely pollen, when in reality, as we later learned, it was in fact radioactive dust. With people in Tokyo now reporting yellow rain and this yellowy substance on the ground, are they right to trust Japanese government assurances that this yellow substance is merely pollen?
I wouldn't trust anything that the authorities said on this issue. They've consistently lied. They've consistently downplayed the problem, and they continue to do so. So, and when it comes to the nuclear industry, they seem to be able to cast some kind of spell over human beings. They say all these things, and they say this is safe, and this is the same as flying to America, or this is the same as eating Brazil nuts. All these inappropriate comparisons, and in fact also inappropriate comparisons with natural background radiation. They will say this is the same as a chest X-ray. This is the same as dose that you would get in a year. These are all external radiation measurements, and they're not comparable to internal radiation of the type that would cause the yellow puddles. Or actually, you know, at least you can see the yellow puddles. I mean, the type that is floating about in the air and is completely invisible because people don't have eyes that can detect this stuff. So everything seems perfectly normal, and you have to rely upon the authorities to tell you if it's dangerous. And their estimation of its danger is based on an outdated and obsolete and completely discredited radiation risk model, which is based on the atomic bomb and has absolutely nothing to say about internal radionuclide exposures. And as I say, there are loads and loads of papers, scientific papers, in the peer review literature, which show that these internal radionuclide exposures are up to 1,000 times more dangerous than the dose would suggest. So if they say the dose is X, multiply it by about 500, and you're about right in terms of the dose. And we've published on the website of the Low Level Radiation Campaign and my own organization, the ECRR, so you can go to either of those, llrc.org or uradcom.org, and you can find a simple method of calculating the likely cancer risk, the cancer outcome of the exposure at any particular dose that they publish.
and I'll bite that up in encouraging people to visit those websites. You mentioned the proponents of the nuclear industry downplaying this, which is it's not right, but it's understandable why they're doing it. But what baffles me is these self-proclaimed environmentalists, and I'm specifically talking about British environmentalist George Monbiot, who has been writing articles for The Guardian over the past 2 weeks, including his most recent one, Why Fukushima Made Me Stop Worrying and Love Nuclear Power. And Monbiot writes that critics of the nuclear industry have, quote, wildly exaggerated the dangers of radioactive pollution. So, Dr. Busby, given the fact that Monbiot claims is this preeminent environmentalist icon, why is he completely disregarding the threat of nuclear fallout and treating it as if it's some, you know, nutritious health benefit?
Well, I have to say that I know George Monbiot, and he doesn't know anything. This is really the problem. Most of these pundits that come out, they're not scientists, they're not researchers. They have never done any research in this area, and so they tend to rely upon people that tell them things, and I guess he's relying upon all of the misinformation coming from the nuclear industry lobby and their friends. Otherwise, there's no possible explanation for what he's saying, because what he's saying is total nonsense. In fact, it's criminally irresponsible for him to write what he writes, given that he doesn't know anything. I mean, at minimum, he ought to say, well, I don't know anything, but this is what I think. But he comes out with all this tosh. I have to say that about 2 years ago, George phoned me up. I was on holiday, and he wanted me to give him an account of the effects of low-dose radiation and so on. And I went to some lengths to write some article, a little article for him, which I sent to him. So it's not as if he doesn't know. And then he wrote an article in The Guardian, where he has a column, in which he totally ignored everything I said and put out some, you know, similar sort of nonsense to the nonsense he's writing now. But the nonsense he's writing now is actually much more dangerous, because it's in the middle of a crisis when people are being exposed to these radionuclides and becoming contaminated. And you will see, and I predict, a very large and measurable increase in cancer and other ill health after this accident in people living in the north of Japan, certainly in Tokyo, where there's a very large population. So it would be easy to show this. And just like Chernobyl, where you could also show this, they will say, oh, well, you know, it must be radiophobia, or they've got the numbers wrong, or perhaps it's the contamination from the sea, from the tsunami, etc., etc. Anything but the actual cause of the increase in cancer. So we are asking people in the area, all of them, to take samples and put them in a plastic bag and just keep them. Write the date right where it was and put it inside somewhere safe. And then afterwards, when they develop cancer, oh, or their son or their mother or their uncle, their Mary.
We'll be back after the break. Back live, it's the Alex Jones Show, Friday, March 25th. Mike Adams, editor of naturalnews.com, will be your host for the second half of the broadcast. So we have George Monbiot, who claims that man-made global warming is making areas of the globe uninhabitable, but then he says that radioactive fallout, which in the case of Chernobyl, measurably did make entire areas of the globe uninhabitable, saying that concerns about radioactive fallout from Fukushima are, quote, wildly exaggerated. He says, as a result of the disaster at Fukushima, I am no longer nuclear neutral. I now support the technology. And this is somebody who describes himself as an environmentalist. Dr. Chris Busby, did you have any closing comments on that particular subject?
Well, yeah, well, I think I said that George doesn't know anything. I mean, that's mainly the problem. So he can say anything he likes, but he hasn't done any research in this area, and he hasn't read anything in this area. He's quite ignorant. He's an ignorant person when it comes to this. I'm quite happy to debate this face-to-face with George, who I know vaguely, on any TV show. And I do court cases on this issue and win them. So it's, the evidence is just massive that he's wrong. I mean, what else can I say? He can go and say these things, and there are other people like Mark Lynas that say the same thing. They do so from a base of ignorance. I mean, I've researched this stuff for 20 years. I've written 2 research papers on it. I've studied epidemiological correlations between radiation and health. I mean, I know what I'm talking about. These people don't know what they're talking about. And I think, as I said before, criminally irresponsible of them to say these things.
Okay, now, we've had a lot of callers. Basically, what people... We won't have time for callers with you, because obviously we're finishing at the bottom of the hour. But the most common question that we get is, how can people take steps to protect themselves from the radiation that's encircling the globe and not become victims like the people of Chernobyl and surrounding areas were? We have potassium iodide obviously selling out. You have the weaker liquid form of that, which is a good method to build up your body's defenses. Are we just limited to potassium iodide, or is there anything else that we can do to try and protect ourselves against this fallout, Dr. Busby?
Well, I think that there's not much that you can do, I'm afraid. You can stay indoors, that's the main thing, until it's died down. You can not drink milk and drink fresh water, eat tinned food and not fresh vegetables. But I don't think at the moment that the concentrations in the other parts of the globe are high enough for people to worry that much about it. The effect is much greater than Chernobyl, but it's pretty localized because the wind is blowing from the west. It's a west wind mainly. The drift is across the Pacific, and there's an awful lot of Pacific before you get to the United States, and then there's an awful lot of United States before you get to the UK. Whereas Chernobyl was in the middle of Europe, and most of the effects from Chernobyl were in Europe because the wind was blowing it over the top of through the Baltic republics, and then over the top of Sweden, and then down into, and also some of it went to Greece. But essentially it was in the middle of a big landmass, whereas this is not. This is on the edge of a landmass, so that's actually saved most people. I wouldn't say they have to worry too much about it. I think maybe for children it would be a good idea to give them stable iodine because that will block their thyroid glands. As far as the particles are concerned, there's not much you can do. These particles are very small and very mobile, so to stay in would be a good idea. It's inhalation is the main problem. Ingestion is not so much of a problem. So it's inhaling the particles that are floating around the globe. And so long as it doesn't get worse, well, which we don't know, but if it does get worse, then the only thing you can do is stay in. That's all you can do. And then the rain will rain out the particles.
Okay. That's all we got time for. Really appreciate you taking the time out to join us today, Dr. Busby. And I'm sure Alex will be talking to you soon in the near future. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. Okay, there goes Dr. Christopher Busby calling George Monbiot, quote, criminally irresponsible for his lies about saying that claims of dangers from radioactive fallout are wildly exaggerated. Dr. Busby said that Fukushima had the potential and, in fact, was already worse than Chernobyl. Now we've got the New Scientist and the Austrian Meteorological Agency reporting that levels of radiation emitted from Fukushima already rival Chernobyl, with no sign of the crisis ending, and with the news today that reactor number 3 has been breached and that the core is leaking, the core is cracked. Of course, Dr. Busby earlier in the interview said that was likely caused by the explosion we saw nearly 2 weeks ago with a plume of debris and the orange fireball shooting high into the sky, and basically that the Japanese authorities have been lying about it for the past 2 weeks as it seeped plutonium radiation. That's all for me. Mike Adams will be taking the reins for the second half of the show. I've been Paul Joseph Watson. Callers, call in for Mike, and be sure to stay tuned for the show at prisonplanet.tv.
To the Alex Jones Show. My name's Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. I'm here to fill in for Alex on the second half of his show. I want to thank Paul Joseph Watson for doing his usual excellent, outstanding breakdown of the news on the first half of this show. In the second half of the Alex Jones Show, we're going to be covering GMOs. We have some information about events happening tomorrow, some protests about genetically engineered seeds. We also have some information about the Health Freedom Expo taking place right now in California and why that matters for your health and your freedom. And speaking of freedom, in about half an hour from right now, we're also going to be talking with gubernatorial candidate Phil Moffitt, who has a really intriguing position. He is saying that the FDA should get off of Kentucky's farms. We'll be talking to him and getting his information about why that matters and how that can help create economic abundance in Kentucky for the farmers and the people there. But first, in the next segment, which is a long segment here, we are going to talk about the Fukushima incident and provide additional information carrying on from what Paul Joseph Watson already presented in the last segment. It's kind of a tag team effort here today. So there's a lot of breaking news, as you're well aware. And also, we're going to take callers about an hour from now, perhaps less. And I would like to ask callers to call in on the Fukushima incident or GMOs. I'm not going to be taking calls on the Libya situation. That's not the focus here on this half of the show. So my apologies to those who wanted to talk about that in this segment. But we're going to be talking about Fukushima, the radiation, GMOs, the safety of the food supply, and the safety of our planet from this nuclear catastrophe. Now, breaking down that information right here to get started, we have some news to go through, breaking news that I compiled for you this morning. And some of it here, of course, Fukushima reactor number 3 suffering a core breach. Water's leaking out. It has about 10,000 times higher levels of radiation than the usual radiation that should be present in the water in the cooling pools. Some of the quotes here are quite ominous, if you think about it. Here we go. The situation today, this is from Japan's prime minister. The situation today is still very grave and serious, he says. We must remain vigilant. We are not in a position where we can be optimistic. We must treat every development with the utmost care. We've got radiation on vegetables 135 miles south of Fukushima right now. That's south. The wind's not even blowing that way, and yet the radiation is headed that way and already contaminating the vegetables and the water there. Even CNN today called it, this new core leak situation, a potentially ominous development in the race to avert or prevent a large-scale release of radiation. Bloomberg today is reporting that the reactor core may be breached at the Fukushima plant. And here's another quote from a spokesman at the Japan's Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency. He said, it's very possible that there's been some kind of a leak in the number 3 reactor. And he goes on to say, even if there has been encouraging news, the installation remains in an extremely precarious and very serious situation, and it has not stabilized. So, and radiation burns are being reported on workers there who stepped into the water. We have more news on the meltdowns. You know, the situation here, folks, if you think about this, at first, they downplayed the entire incident. The plant exploded, the radiation started leaking into the atmosphere, into the water. They were downplaying it. They weren't releasing the radiation numbers. That was covered here on the Alex Jones Show. They were censoring the radiation readings so that people didn't find out what was going on. There is a blanket of secrecy just covering this entire incident. And even the story on that is now beginning to come out because we now have an engineer who worked on the plant, who helped design it, who is going public with the truth about some of the corruption and the cover-ups and the secrecy that went on during the construction of that facility. So now that's starting to come out. But remember, the mainstream media has been downplaying this for at least, what, 8-9 days now, saying that there's no problem here in America. President Obama went on the air and said Americans basically should not prepare. That one blew me away, folks. I don't know where that one came from. Can you imagine former President Harry Truman saying that? You know, back in World War II, the message was to the Americans, get prepared. Grow your victory gardens. Have some extra food on hand. Have some extra water. Be part of the solution. Be part of the war effort to achieve victory and achieve freedom in Europe and in Asia at that time. That was World War II. Today, only a few generations later, our president is telling us, don't prepare. We have a nuclear facility. Smoke is coming out of the reactor cores, out of the reactor buildings, excuse me. We have neutron beams emanating out of these structures. We have the water is too radioactive for infants to drink. The ocean is being irradiated to the point where even the safety of seafood is being questioned. Countries are banning food coming out of Japan because it's irradiated. You can't eat the vegetables out of Fukushima. The situation is not under control, even though we were told it was under control. We were told there was power connected to all the units. But what good is that if there's a leak in the core? What good is the power being connected if the pumps don't work because the pumps were damaged in the explosions? And in this context, our president says, don't get prepared. All of you in California or Washington or Oregon, Alaska, Hawaii, don't get prepared. I'm sorry, I don't understand that one. Everybody who's a fan of the Alex Jones Show here would say, get prepared just in case for everything. But continuing with the news, emissions now are approaching Chernobyl levels. This was covered by Paul Joseph Watson and his guest, Dr. Busby, in the previous segment. Great job on that, by the way. Chernobyl is now looking like it's going to be the second worst disaster in the history of the nuclear industry because Fukushima is sadly and quickly taking the place as the number one worst nuclear disaster in the history of human civilization. As of yesterday, the iodine-131 being released was 73% of the daily levels of that observed after Chernobyl and its meltdown in 1986. Cesium-137 is currently approaching about 60% of the release from Chernobyl in 1986. Three nuke workers in Japan were exposed to high levels of radiation. Here's some more news. Possible radiation burns to their feet caused by what they call beta ray burns. All right, here we go. Neutron beam observed 13 times. That's evidence that the uranium and plutonium leaked from the plant's nuclear reactors and has discharged a small amount of neutron beams via fission. We're all getting a lesson in nuclear physics over the last 2 weeks, whether we like it or not. And unfortunately, the lesson is that physics beats politics. That's right. You can't cover up physics. If the nuclear plant is emitting radiation, you can only lie about it for so long if you're the government of a country like Japan or the United States. You can only try to cover it up for so long, because sooner or later, the radiation just kicks in and it becomes obvious. People's hair started falling out after Chernobyl in 1986. Right now in the USA, the EPA says that 8 of its 18 air monitors are not working along the West Coast. That's California, Oregon, and, oh, sorry, my headset's in the shot there. For those of you watching in Washington now, this is amazing. The EPA spokesperson, Ronald Frass, director of the National Air and Radiation Environmental Laboratories in Alabama, says, quote, "What we are seeing is not a problem." Really? How is it not a problem that your radiation monitors are not working? 22 monitors out of 124 that are deployed across the United States are not working as of today. That's about 1 out of 6, right? That's a lot of radiation monitors that aren't working, and the EPA spokesperson says that's not a problem. You know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like a cover story. It sounds like they're setting themselves up to say that we don't have to report the radiation levels from these sensors, and they can just say, well, see, we told you they weren't working. What a convenient excuse for not reporting the numbers. Let's hope that's not the case. Let's hope the EPA gets on top of this and gets their radiation monitors working so that we can get some accurate information, because that's what's been lacking in this entire situation, is accurate information about what's coming out of Japan. We've been lied to again and again by the governments of both of these nations, Japan and the United States, who are not telling us the truth about the dangers of radiation, about how much radiation is reaching our shores, and about what we should do here in America to prepare ourselves for the possibility of radioactive fallout. The fallout has begun. Sure, the levels they say are very low right now as background radiation, but again, if you're one of those unfortunate individuals who happens to inhale a radioactive particle that has been sent over from Fukushima, then it's not background radiation anymore. It's internal radiation, and you could die of cancer 20, 30 years down the road because of that incident. So I believe that our governments have a responsibility to give us more accurate information. And that's why I think it's great that you're tuning in to the Alex Jones Show, because this has been a source here over the past 2 weeks for some truly outstanding information that the federal government is not providing to the American people. But you know that. That's why you're listening. Radioactive yellow rain has been falling in Tokyo. Of course, they explain this away as pollen. Yeah, it's just pollen, folks. Don't worry when there's a nuclear near meltdown scenario and it starts raining yellow rain. Don't worry about that. Of course, the folks in Chernobyl in 1986 were told the exact same thing, and it wasn't long before they started vomiting and their hair fell out, and there were pictures of deformed animals starting to circulate around that realm. in the weeks following the yellow rain falling out of the sky. So yellow rain, bad sign. A lot of these are very dangerous and bad signs. Now, just how dangerous could the situation be for the long haul out of Fukushima with this yellow rain? They say it's pollen. I don't believe them. With the vegetables and the crops being irradiated 135 miles away, with the radiation in the water and the oceans and the air, just how bad could it be? Well, there was a study actually conducted by the National Institutes of Health. This is from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, if you can believe that. 25 years after the Chernobyl incident, people there are still getting radiation. It's right here. It says high cancer risk continues after Chernobyl. This is it right here from NIH News, National Institutes of Health. It says that iodine-131 radiation led to an increased risk for thyroid cancer that has not seemed to diminish over time. Think about that. 25 years later, they are still paying the price for their mistakes and their cover-ups in Chernobyl. It makes you wonder, what kind of price are we going to be paying in our world now from the fallout that's being caused from Fukushima? And especially, what kind of price are the Japanese people going to be paying for this? Because they don't have a lot of places to go. That island is not a very large landmass. And it is admitted this morning, I don't have the source with me here, but it was admitted that they may have to begin looking at making areas of Japan uninhabitable by human beings because of this incident. And certainly if the reactor number 3 core is leaking, and if these emissions, these radioactive emissions from plutonium and the MOX fuel there, which we calculated as being 2 million times more deadly than regular enriched uranium, if that gets into the environment in Japan, you can bet there are going to be areas of that country that are not habitable by human beings for a very long time to come. And on top of all that, we have a lack of data coming out. This is from the LA Times, believe it or not. Lack of data from Japan distresses nuclear experts. I wrote here, you can see this on prisonplanet.tv, I wrote lack of data. Secrecy. That just means they don't want to tell you what's going on. They don't want to show you pictures of what's happening inside these plants, and they don't want to share with you the real numbers of the radiation levels that are being caused by this incident. There's a lot of frustration out there, even in the nuclear industry, about the lack of information from Fukushima. Almost every step of the way, reported the LA Times, the problems at the Fukushima plant have been understated by those in charge in Japan, leaving observers scrambling to analyze the situation as best they can from afar. That means guessing, folks, guessing. They're guessing with the situation there when they could be telling you the truth. The problem with that is when they guess, they leave the people with a lot of question marks, and they cause fear. They cause panic by not giving people good information. It's the same thing with preparedness. When the president comes on and says, people don't prepare, there's no need to worry, you don't have to really take any extra precautions, then in my view, if there's a situation like serious radioactive fallout in California, which is still possible because of the core containment breach today, then people who have not prepared are going to freak out. They're going to panic because they don't have the extra water. They don't have the potassium iodide, or they don't have the stored food. They don't have anything because their leader told them, don't get prepared. It doesn't make any sense to me. Why not help people realize the importance of getting prepared so that if something happens, people are going to be more calm? You're not going to have such a panic. You're not going to have such a run on supplies. And if you have to bring in the National Guard to give people extra water and to distribute extra potassium iodide or things like that, then those who have already prepared in advance are going to ease the burden on the National Guard or on any of the emergency services that are bringing in those materials. So the right thing for any nation that has nuclear power in its borders today, the right thing is for the leaders of that nation to say, people, get prepared just in case, every day. Even without Fukushima, be prepared every single day. It's just bizarre that that's not being stated out there. We'll have to cover that more, hopefully, on another show. But okay, Japan, U.S. watchdog now sees gaps in reactor safety. This is from Financial Times. It says 28% of the nuclear plants in America are not reporting the defects. Here we go. They're not reporting the defects of their parts and the functioning of those parts unless a nuclear incident, or I'm sorry, a maintenance incident occurs. So we have the NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, that does not check whether the operators of nuclear power plants in the United States are reporting defective parts. They're just leaving it up to them. Just, if you feel like it, tell us if something's defective. If you feel like it, no worries there. Nothing big is going on in this world today, so don't be worried about it. Folks, the situation is worsening. This is the bottom line. Now, we of course, are hoping and praying for Japan and for the engineers there to be able to get the situation under control. But I'm not betting my life on them telling us the truth, and you shouldn't either. Don't bet your life on your government giving you honest information about this situation, because you know, if you're listening to this show, you know that they've been lying to us, and they're probably going to keep lying to us as long as they can get away with it. The right thing right now is to stay tuned in to the alternative media, like right here on the Alex Jones Show, where you get good, accurate, and up-to-date information on what's really happening in Fukushima and outstanding interviews with experts like you just heard in the previous segment. So if you have questions about Fukushima and you'd like to be on the show in the next hour, be sure to call in. We will be taking questions about the Fukushima incident and hopefully get some answers out there for those who are listening. Now stay tuned to the Alex Jones Show here across the break that we're about to take. We're going to come back and talk about GMOs and protests happening tomorrow in Washington, D.C. We have millions against Monsanto. We have crazy news from the world of health. We will be right back. My name's Mike Adams, right here on the Alex Jones Show. Talk to you soon. Welcome back, friends, to the Alex Jones Show. I'm filling in for Alex during the second half of his show today. My name's Mike Adams, call sign the Health Ranger, the editor of naturalnews.com. And today we are talking about the Fukushima incident, GMOs, health freedom, and we have an interview with gubernatorial candidate Phil Moffitt coming up in just about 15 minutes right here on the Alex Jones Show. We also have some breaking news about his campaign that we'll be sharing with you in a few minutes, so be sure to stay tuned for that. Right now, let's get into some about Monsanto and GMOs. There's an event taking place tomorrow in Washington and all around the country in cities everywhere. Let's see, what do we have? Right here in Austin, Nashville, in Atlanta, New York City, all over the country. This Millions Against Monsanto, this is a rally for the right to know what's in our food. That's right. It's a rally for knowing, for honest GMO labeling of our foods. And you can find out more about this by going to the website run by Jeffrey Smith, who's been a frequent guest here on the Alex Jones Show. His website is responsibletechnology.org. And on responsibletechnology.org, you can see the action alerts on the right-hand side there. There is a rally for the right to know Saturday happening across the U.S., so be sure to join in that. That's a big event. Now, why do we have a right to know? We only have a short amount of time in this segment, but I have to cover this. Why do we have a right to know? Because the grocery stores out there, even the health food stores, are selling foods that contain GMOs, but they're labeling them as all natural. They're not telling you that there's GMOs in the foods. And we're showing a video here for those on PrisonPlanet.tv about the Millions Against Monsanto March. Now, we have a right to know what's in our food. I think most people would agree with that. The FDA, of course, believes that labeling foods, honestly, might confuse people. That's right. If you had information like the fact that there's GMOs in your food, they think you might be confused by all that. They say it might confuse people because they say it would make people think that genetically modified food might be different from non-genetically modified food. Seriously, that's their logic. In their minds, it's no different. No different. I think they forgot what the word modified means. Genetically modified food means it's modified. It's genetically modified. That's different than non-GMO food, and that's why we deserve the right to have it labeled on our foods so we know what we're buying and we can avoid these GMOs wherever possible. The demands of this rally are that we want the right to know what's in our food. We want factory farmed animals and genetically modified animal products labeled just so that we can have a choice to know what's in there. We want long-term studies done on the safety of GMOs, and in addition, we want the organic industry to not be cross-contaminated by GMOs. So check that out at responsibletechnology.org. Also, going on this weekend, Saturday in Long Beach, California, is the Health Freedom Expo. You can go to healthfreedomexpo.com to learn about that. I'm giving a video presentation there. This matters to us all because health freedom is crucial for the future of our country. To get the FDA off of our farms, the FDA out of our foods, so that we can have honest labeling of natural supplements and herbal remedies that really work to prevent disease, that actually work in many cases better than pharmaceuticals. I mean, a lot of pharmaceuticals don't work at all. They actually harm you more than they help you. But natural foods, natural supplements, dietary supplements need to be able to be honestly labeled with their scientifically validated benefits. And that's what the Health Freedom Expo is working toward. So check that out. If you're out in California, be sure to go visit the Health Freedom Expo. And remember, we're going to continue talking about the FDA and food freedom here with gubernatorial candidate Phil Moffitt from Kentucky on the other side of this hour. Now, I also brought in some weird news for you from the world of health. All right, we're getting ready to go to break. We'll cover this on the other side. But believe me, it's some strange news about how doctors are overcharging Medicare, Medicaid, and insurance companies for simple procedures like $60,000 for ultrasound. Stay tuned right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, welcome back, folks, to the Alex Jones Show. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, filling in for Alex today. We've been talking about Fukushima radiation catastrophe and how it's spreading radiation across the world now with reactor number three core containment vessel break that is causing a leak there. We've been talking about GMOs and the events taking place tomorrow around the country to protest the non-labeling of GMOs in our food supply. People are demanding across the political spectrum, on the left, the right, everybody in between, everybody wants to know what's in their food. We also have talked about health freedom a little bit, and joining us shortly, we're going to have Kentucky gubernatorial candidate Phil Moffitt, who is going to be joining us and talking about his amazing platform that says keep the FDA off of our farms in Kentucky, get the federal government out of our lives so that our farmers can pursue their own economic abundance without having their hands tied behind their backs or without being carted off as criminals for growing things such as industrial hemp, which we import from other countries anyway to make clothing and bags and food. So why not let Kentucky farmers grow it? Industrial hemp, you can't smoke it. It's not that drug. It's industrial hemp only, and it's good for making clothing and fibers. Hey, the Constitution is written on hemp. So that's what we're talking about, bringing that back to America. So Phil Moffitt's going to be joining us. Phil, are you there right now?
Yes, sir, I am.
Thank you, Mr. Moffitt, for joining us today. Now, for those who aren't familiar with your platform and what you're saying here, can you give us a brief summary of what you're running on here with the FDA and keeping the FDA off of the farms of the Kentucky farmers?
Well, one of the corners of our platform is fighting for state sovereignty under the 9th and 10th Amendments. And part of that is using the power of nullification to get the federal government out of our coal fields in Kentucky and off of our, and the FDA off of our farms. And it also applies to trying to get any unconstitutional regulation or law that comes from the federal government off our territory in Kentucky. We're able and free people, and we need to be treated as such by the U.S. government.
Well, let me ask you, what's wrong with the FDA on your farms there in Kentucky? Why are you against that?
Well, for a number of reasons. One, it's not a right given to them as, enumerated in the Constitution. So they shouldn't have any place regulating how we farm or what we farm in Kentucky. And the other is that they're choking our farms to death. They're taking away crops. They're bringing in they're trying to force us to use the seeds from, genetically modified seeds. And they're trying all kinds of techniques, basically, to tell us what to do and when to do it. And that's not how free people live.
That's exactly right. Now, where did this come from? I know you're a Tea Party candidate for, and you're running in the gubernatorial primary, which is coming up very soon. But what caused you to pursue this position, and what kind of feedback are you getting from the people of Kentucky that you're talking to right now about this position?
Well, what caused us to do it is our farmers are going broke. Slowly but surely, the federal government has taken away crops from them and opportunity for them to prosper. And one of the biggest things that they took away from us, and they did this quite some time ago, but it needs to come back now because it has even more relevance today than it did 100 years ago, and that's industrial hemp. These things, industrial hemp is a wonderful product. It grows exceptionally well in Kentucky. It can be used for all types of things, including food, clothing, oils, lotions, medicines. And it was the number one cash crop in Kentucky until the DEA, believe it or not, in the 1930s, took it away from our farmers because they tied it to marijuana, which is an unjust tying together of two things. Because you can smoke hemp, but you certainly can't get high off of it.
The response
has been very good. I'll tell you, there are a lot of people in Kentucky that want the organic food industry in Kentucky. They want industrial hemp. They want their farmers to just...
All right, Phil, we got to take a break here, Phil. We will be joining you on the other side of this break. Stay with us here on the Alex Jones Show. We'll be returning with Phil Moffitt, getting the FDA off Kentucky's farms.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. I'm filling in for Alex today. I'm Mike Adams, the editor of Natural News. We are joined right now by Phil Moffitt, who is the gubernatorial candidate for Kentucky, and he's running on a unique and very uplifting platform, actually, about getting the feds off of our farms, out of our lives, so that the farmers of Kentucky can experience economic abundance without the interference of Washington. It's about more than farmers, but Phil Moffitt is joining us again in this segment. Phil, what has been the reaction now so far to your message out on the streets in Kentucky?
The reaction has been wonderful. A lot of people in Kentucky understand how repressive the federal government has become, especially to our farmers. We had an absolutely wonderful tobacco industry here in Kentucky that was taken away from us through federal regulation and lawsuits, and it really has left our farmers in such a tough spot. They're trying to fight now in the soybean and soy markets, which of course are worldwide markets with very low margins, and they need more crops and more opportunity to be free people. And, you know, industrial hemp and the whole foods industry and the natural foods industry would be great extensions for them, and it would allow us to bring jobs and prosperity back to Kentucky in a way we haven't seen in a long time.
And as you're explaining, the federal government has interfered with the ability of Kentucky farmers to grow crops that would actually make them a profit, such as industrial hemp, which, again, we're importing from other countries and not allowing it to be grown right here in America. I mean, how does that policy even come to exist in America, where American farmers can't grow the stuff that we're buying from other countries? Doesn't make sense.
It's what you might expect. It was a power grab by a rich industrialist in the 1930s. Andrew Mellon, who was the Bill Gates of the day and the owner of Mellon Bank, was the Secretary of Treasury under FDR. And he was also one of the seed investors in a company called DuPont Chemical.
There you go.
DuPont Chemical was starting to, you know, understanding things like plastics and nylons and those types of things. The synthetics industry was being born, and their number one competitor was the industrial hemp industry in the United States. So hemp at the time was, you know, used for clothing and fabrics, ropes, and all kinds of different things. And, of course, by taking that off the market, and how they did it was they used that current day DEA to tie hemp, which is in the cannabis family, to tie industrial hemp to marijuana, and they made it illegal and took it off in just a day or so, took an entire market away from Kentucky farmers and other states as well.
It's incredible, but just to be clear for those listening, your position is not about medical marijuana. You're not advocating marijuana. You're advocating just that farmers can grow industrial hemp, to be used for clothing, to be used for making personal care products, and even hemp seeds, which are a nutritional product, those kinds of things, correct?
That is absolutely correct. We are not trying to get marijuana legalized in Kentucky. We want industrial hemp re-legalized in Kentucky.
There you go. Now, I understand that your position is gaining such strength, and you have so much momentum moving forward now, that you're already starting to be attacked with some rather sleazy types of tactics that we see in a lot of political campaigns. This is some of the breaking news. We just got word before we went on the air with you here, Phil, that someone is running counterfeit ads in your name on Facebook to try to discredit you.
That's exactly right. It is amazing that they would do this, but the truth is there are a lot of bad people out there. They're trying to pit us against the New Hampshire's Free State Project, and this ad says something to the effect that we don't believe that they've done a good job, and it sheds a bad light on them, and that's just not the case. We appreciate what they're doing in New Hampshire and hope them the best. My late father-in-law told me at one time, he's an old Army Air Corps pilot, he said that you're over the target when you start catching the flak. And that's exactly what's happening to us. We have a good message. We're getting it out there. The people are excited about it. And now they're just trying to destroy me personally.
Well, you're right in the crosshairs now. Of course you're going to be hit with a big disinfo campaign. You can expect a lot more, Phil, as I'm sure you're aware. But if you think about it, you are challenging the authority of the federal government in the state of Kentucky. And they know that if you win and you can protect that power of the state there and you can enforce the 10th Amendment rights of the state of Kentucky versus the federal government, that you will set a precedent. And that precedent is extremely dangerous to the power that's slipping through the fingers of those at the federal government who don't want the states to be able to make their own decisions about things like food and medicine and farming and economics and so on.
Well, you're absolutely right, but I like the company that I'm in because Thomas Jefferson in 1798 wrote something called the Kentucky Resolution. And that was a resolution he wrote in response to the Aliens and Seditions Act. And basically what it said is that Thomas Jefferson said that if the general government assumes undelegated powers, then nullification is the act that is right, that is the rightful remedy. And that's what we need to do. I don't believe, and I've read the Constitution several times, if we don't fight against the federal government, I don't believe there's a statute of limitations that keeps us from starting the fight today or starting the fight tomorrow. They've taken our rights away. We need to get them back and on our side of the fence. And Kentucky is just one of many states as Kentucky's governor, one of many governors that are looking forward to this fight with the federal government to get them back into the Constitution.
Yeah, you're right, Phil. There's no statute of limitations on freedom. And thank goodness for that, too. Now, Phil Moffitt, your website, let me just spell that out for people listening. It's Phil Moffitt, M-O-F-F-E-T-T. com. So you can check out more information about Phil Moffitt on that website. We are going to continue with Phil here. I have a question for you. Phil, have you done any calculations or can you just take a shot at this about what it would mean to Kentucky's economy if you could get the federal government off your farms, out of your industrial hemp farming history, and reestablish freedom for the state of Kentucky in the agriculture sense? What would that mean for your people there in the state?
Well, I can tell you the University of Kentucky did a study in 1990 about the impact that industrial hemp would have in Kentucky if it were re-legalized. And by their numbers, they estimated that as many as 90,000 new jobs would be created in Kentucky as a result of the farming and the processing of hemp and the related products that would come from it. Now that's a really big number, and even if we only got a third of that impact, it would be a home run, and really of epic proportions in Kentucky. So it's opening our farmers up to be able to make the common sense decisions that they're capable of making. Will turn us into one of the best economies in the nation. And I know that scares a lot of people out there because Kentucky's always been a laggard in almost every way. And here we are looking at an opportunity to jump ahead of the rest of the country. And actually lead.
Well, I can see with you at the helm there, Kentucky would become, if your policies were able to get through and you were able to protect them from the federal government, Kentucky would become the industrial hemp farming capital of the country. I could actually see farmers migrating to Kentucky to buy land that would increase the land values throughout the state. There would be higher tax revenues, higher exports out of Kentucky. This would be an economic gold mine for the state of Kentucky. And frankly, the first state that does this is going to get the most riches from that gold mine, it seems, wouldn't you say?
I agree with that. And, you know, it also opens up the multi-billion-dollar organic and natural food industry as well. I mean, they are looking for a place to be able to grow their crops without having the government crawling all over them every day. And it's something that we need to have in place. It seems so common sense to me and so fundamental in terms of a right of freedom. I have a hard time believing so many people don't believe resistant to this type of stuff in terms of getting the federal government off of our farms and out of our coal fields.
Well, it's amazing. The American people have been trained, as you well know. They've been hypnotized in many cases to just do what they're told, follow their orders. They're drugged often with so many medications that they're beyond critical thinking ability. You know, there's fluoride in the water. The food has been stripped of many of its nutritional values because of the refining and the processing and the bleaching and the homogenization through the processed food industry. And what you're talking about now in Kentucky, growing real food, organic food even, real crops that can be used right here in America, that would help, I think, wake Americans up from the healthy, nutritious soil that Kentucky is blessed with. I mean, you really have a gold mine there.
Well, I agree with you. It's the situation is that we really have been brainwashed, you know, over the last 3 or 4 decades, if not longer, to believe that everything that the federal government does is to protect us. And it really is nonsense. Most of the things that they have put into place and insist stay in place have done absolutely nothing positive for us. And we need to roll that back and get back to the basics and get back to understanding that, you know, farmers need economic opportunities and we need to promote self-reliance. I mean, it's what made this country great. And it has to, we have to go back to that or we're going to convert ourselves into some semi-socialist European nation.
Well, those are dangerous words in Washington. Self-reliance. How dare you suggest such a thing for Americans? Self-reliance. Hey, people are supposed to depend on the government to tell them what to do, what to eat, what kind of medicine to buy, what kind of vaccines to take, so on and so forth. You know, the idea that people could actually rely on themselves or each other or their local communities, that's the antithesis of what Washington is trying to sell these days.
Well, and you're right, and it's the opposite of what the founders believed.
Absolutely.
You know, the founders believed that if you could push government as far out to the people as possible so that local problems are being solved by local people with local money, that things would be much better for everybody, and they were right on the money with it. And, you know, we need to quit thinking with the central government mindset and turn it back around to where they allow us to define what our problems are, what our solutions are, and our funding needs to be on a local basis.
That's absolutely the key. We are heading towards a break here now. On the other side of the break, I want to ask you, Phil, about why the left, even many people on the left, like your position as well. Your position crosses party boundaries and brings it back to freedom and self-reliance and getting the federal government off our farms and out of our states. Join us back here on the other side of this break on The Alex Jones Show with Phil Moffitt. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show. This is Mike Adams filling in for Alex today, and we are joined by some good music in the background there. We are joined by gubernatorial candidate for the state of Kentucky, Phil Moffitt, who is running on a platform of nullifying the FDA's influence over Kentucky's farms and even nullifying the Department of Agriculture's mandates over farming there. Mr. Moffitt is also an opponent of the Obama healthcare system that has been pushed upon Americans. And I also wanted to ask you, too, Phil, about what do you think about the Senate 510 Food Safety Act that has been passed and that is now going to further burden U.S. farmers who are trying to you know, just make an honest living?
Well, this is another example of the government passing legislation and putting some happy name on it, like the Food Safety Act. And in reality, what they're doing is stripping away more of our liberties and more of our freedoms with the act itself. And, you know, we just have to stop this stuff. If they, you know, if we really knew that, that certain products were absolute carcinogens or absolute health hazards and things like that, I can understand where the federal government would want to act. But the reality is all they're interested in is telling us what to do and when to do it and how to do it. And they're killing our farm economy by doing that, and it just needs to stop. They need to give that power back to the state. We have a fully functional Department of Agriculture at the state level in Kentucky, and we're perfectly capable of managing our own affairs in that regard.
Exactly, and with the economic abundance that would come from the freedom that you would like to restore to Kentucky's farmers, seems like the state of Kentucky would have a lot of extra tax revenues to use for running things like your own state Department of Agriculture. Makes economic sense, doesn't it?
It makes economic sense anytime government gets out of the way and lets people figure things out on their own. Because the free market is the most efficient vehicle for getting progress accomplished in terms of new products, new services. And the more the government stands in the way, the more they retard that effort.
And what's really interesting about your position, this is just my comment, I have a lot of readers on both the left and the right, and a lot of libertarian readers as well. And I noticed that even people on the far left are very much in support of your basic platform here of being able to grow what you want to grow without the feds coming in and telling you can't grow that. Industrial hemp being used to create hemp seeds, which are very rich in omega-3s, and hemp clothing, which is really rugged and long-lasting. You can blend it with cotton. You know, even the people on the left have been actually calling out for some of these things, of course, perhaps in a different context. I understand that's not where you're coming from, Phil. You're a Tea Party candidate. But isn't it interesting that your position has such broad appeal that crosses virtually all party boundaries and just gets down to the root of freedom for the people? At a local level,
common sense has a broad appeal. You know, there is not a reasonable explanation other than a power grab by a rich industrialist in the 1930s that industrial hemp ever should have been taken off the market. There was absolutely no reason for it, and it needs to be brought back. As I said earlier, common sense has broad appeal across all segments of society, and I think I think a big part of the Tea Party movement coming to life is the fact that, you know, people understand at a common sense level we can't keep burying our country in debt. Just like at a common sense level we know that we can't continue to be buried in regulation from the FDA and the EPA on things that really are local issues that we should be figuring out on our own.
And what can people do, Phil, who want to support your campaign or learn more about the progress of your campaign?
Well, we definitely need your help. We have 54 days till our primary. We actually have a May 17, 2011 primary. And you can go out to philmoffett.com at philmoffett.com. Sign up for email updates. You can sign up to volunteer or make donations. And also you can follow us on Twitter, which is MoffittHarmon11, which is 1-1. So MoffittHarmon, H-A-R-M-O-N, 1-1. And that's on Twitter. So get in touch with us. We would love to have you as part of the team, and we need your support.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Phil, for joining us here on the Alex Jones Show today. And thank you for adopting this platform of nullifying the FDA, the DEA, and the USDA in the state of Kentucky. It will be very interesting to see how this moves forward. We wish you the best of success in your candidacy. And, of course, any candidate who's running for office on a platform of freedom is likely to do increasingly well in the days ahead, because I think America has reached a tipping point. America is tired of the federal government telling us how to live our lives, grow our food, and take our medicine. And people are changing. People are recognizing we've got to have freedom if we want to have a future. We'll be back on the other side of this break right here on The Alex Jones Show. Stay with us.
Our engineer to produce an insecticide. I'm looking at the food that's in the grocery store. They say it's safe, everybody eat more. On second thought, I don't really
Jones
know.
Show. With those. Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, filling in for Alex today. And you were just hearing a segment from a song I did called Just Say No to GMOs. It's trying to do a little music on the side and try to sing about some topics that people need to know about freedom and GMOs and so on. Now, in this segment, we are going to be taking calls. If you would like to call in, the number is 800-259-9231. You can call in. We want to be taking calls about Fukushima and GMOs in this segment. So please, callers, respect those topics. And we're going to go to callers right now. We have, I believe here, we have Stephen in Florida calling in. Go ahead, Stephen. You're on the air. Stephen, are you there? All right, moving on to Noel in Illinois.
Hello. Hello, Mike. It's a pleasure speaking with you. You do an unbelievable job, man. God bless your work. Two quick questions on GMO foods. I'm a college student. I'm an inspiring investigative reporter. Wondering how in the world I could interview you on my show for what college kids can do to prepare to get themselves self-sufficient in a way from these fancy GMO foods. And secondly, about natural medicines. I use Tom's of Maine fluoride-free toothpaste. What can people do natural ways for dental work and then natural medicines that we could get cheap at some grocery stores?
Well, the best medicine is actually food. If you go out and you buy raw purple cabbage, for example, juice a little bit of that in a juicer, that stuff actually treats ulcers better than ulcer drugs. Raw broccoli juice, for example, has an anti-cancer effect. It helps prevent breast cancer and prostate cancer. Virtually every color in your food, purple cabbage or the red of an apple skin or grape skin, fruits and vegetables and seeds and nuts, they all contain natural medicines. So those are some great ones. Of course, there are great products that concentrate those as natural supplements. I don't want to name any specific products right here, but there are some great ones out there. If you want to connect with me, you have to do that through the Natural News website, and I would very much enjoy being on your show. I'm sitting in for Alex today, focused on the Alex Jones topics, which are Fukushima and GMOs. I appreciate your call. Thank you, Noel. Daryl from Texas.
How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Daryl. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, I wanted to ask a few questions, and I realize we're pressed for time, so I'm thinking the best way thing for me to do is maybe just take about 15 or 20 seconds, ask these questions, and then you can maybe formulate your answer. And those are, I'm interested in comparing this event in Fukushima to maybe Hiroshima, Nagasaki, to kind of assess what we've been through in the past. And assuming this will enter our food, how we can educate ourselves to best avoid these. And also, is there anywhere to run, basically, on the globe? Is this stuff going to circle and equilibrate through the globe? I understand it will always be more devastating towards the source.
Well, one of the big differences, Daryl, of course, in the atomic weapons dropped in World War II, it was a single large burst of radiation that then faded out immediately. What we have in Fukushima is a slowly building, sustained release of radiation that is nowhere near being under control. So now we're dealing with sort of a marathon of radiation exposure, where in Nagasaki, we were dealing with a one-time burst of radiation and a lot of fallout afterwards. Now, this situation in Fukushima could actually end up impacting a greater number of people with, of course, a lower severity of radiation than the atomic weapons of World War II. But it could impact a lot more people over time. Did you have a follow-up question?
Yes, please. Obviously, this is going to be a greater threat in the Pacific, and I am just becoming a big fan of things like chlorella and spirulina, which float in the ocean. They're algae. The question would be, if this is in our food and our soil, can we expect it to decrease over time? Also, do you think the spirulina and the algae that's on the shelves in the grocery store right now has probably been in a warehouse somewhere. It's probably safe to eat because it has not been in the water in the last 2 weeks.
That's right. The spirulina and chlorella, those are both really excellent microalgae superfoods that I've been recommending and even taking for a long time. They have lots of benefits, and it is safe to get them off the shelves or from the stores right now. They haven't been irradiated. In fact, some of the best spirulina in the world is grown in Hawaii. And so pristine water is actually in Hawaii, and the other foods should be safe for now. We have to monitor the situation and see what the radioactive fallout is going to be over the long run. The interesting thing about this, though, by the way, is that many of the answers to radiation actually come out of the ocean and have traditionally been part of the Japanese diet. For example, high iodine content seaweeds, which are consumed in very high quantities in Japan, these are the very things that can help protect your thyroid from radiation exposure. Thank you for your call, Daryl. Some great questions here also from Noel earlier. Tony in Michigan, you're on the air. What's your question?
Hey, Mike. I appreciate you taking my call. I just want to say that our local newspaper in the area of Southeast Michigan I live went under, and it was replaced by a kind of internet thing that does kind of a half poor job of covering what a real newspaper did, even though real newspapers are controlled, obviously. But I enjoy reposting some of your articles on their community wall page, so to speak, and for the most part, they leave them up there, so your information counteracts some of the misinformation that comes out of the hospital
industry. Thank you, Tony. Go ahead. What's your question for us?
My wife and I, and we have a six-year-old son, we have a natural food supplement, kelp, which is obviously an iodine supplement. On the bottle, it's listed as 150 micrograms. Just your opinion, I know you can't diagnose things like a doctor, but your opinion about taking that supplement now and also about giving that to a child now, just a precautionary to build up, or does that work that way?
Well, it does work that way. You need to have natural sources of iodine in your body. Now, Dr. Brownstein, who I believe has been a guest here on the Alex Jones Show, has studied this extensively and talks about the need to consume milligrams of iodine, not just micrograms, but milligrams. 8 to 12 milligrams per day for an adult, I believe, is his general recommendation for ongoing prevention of a variety of disorders such as thyroid disorders. And iodine is even helpful in preventing certain types of degenerative conditions. Now, of course, if you're going to take supplements, I always encourage you to seek out a naturopathic physician so that you're working with somebody who can get your overall sense of what you're taking and what you need. But as a general rule, iodine can be taken in much higher levels than what is recommended by the U.S. government, whose nutritional advice is always really low. Remember, these are the same folks at the government who say you don't need much vitamin D either, or zinc, or magnesium, or calcium. All the numbers are kept artificially low, which causes nutritional deficiency in America, which then feeds the profits of the drug industry and the cancer industry. So it's all connected. That's a great point that you made there, Tony. Thank you for your call. Really appreciate these great questions. Fred in Florida, you're on the Alex Jones Show. Go ahead, please.
I've been following the NHK World news out of Japan. They've been quite informative about the Fukushima situation. The current thinking about the number 3 reactor leakage is that it's from a broken pipe or valve inside a reactor vessel rather than a crack or breach in the reactor vessel itself. They think this because if the reactor vessel itself was ruptured, that the leaking radiation would be much higher.
Well, that's a really important point. I'm glad you're bringing us that news from NHK. That's, of course, one of the news networks out of Japan. If that's confirmed, that would be a very positive development. I hope that's the case. I hope it's not actually the containment vessel of the core itself. Thank you for your call. Linda from California, you're on the air. What's your question?
You know, oxygen and diet and lifestyle are the prescribed ways to stay healthy, and that applies to Japan, to the facilities as well as the people, which need light and oxygen and air that breaks down toxic waste as well as fallout. Otherwise, it builds and deteriorates into even finer stuff, which is why people get cancer years later. So the advice to people would be an oxygen diet lifestyle. That's why raw foods and ocean stuff, all of this could come under the heading of oxygen. So you don't have to take supplements. You can just fasting is a total detox, because when you don't take any food into your body, it starts expelling the toxins. So well, you're using all of your body.
You're exactly right, Linda. Some really good points there. I would just add that, you know, detox is something that a lot of people need because of all the processed foods and junk foods and so on that we tend to consume in America today. Detox is great, but right now, facing a possible radioactive fallout, I wouldn't want to be in a detox a cycle right now, just because that can make your body weak temporarily. You know what I'm talking about, where the detox is kicking in and you have some of those toxins being released out of your body. I would encourage people to really boost their nutritional intake right now of superfoods and raw foods and juicing and high quality supplements and, you know, real fruits and vegetables and things like that right now, just to build up their body's defenses and nutritional stores in case something begins to happen with the fallout situation. Because this is not over yet. We're not out of the woods with Fukushima. Let's hope it doesn't get any worse. But that's a great point, Linda. Thank you for calling. Steven from Florida, you are on the air. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Mike. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Hey, good to have you.
Yeah, what happened was when you tried to pull me up earlier, I'm trying to, as much as possible, keep the cell phone away from my head.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, so I keep it on speaker, and unfortunately I hit my mute button by mistake. But as far as GMO foods, here's what I wanted to say. You know, I talked to a lot of people about this issue, and even though there's so much information out there through people like you and Alex, and especially Jeffrey Smith, and Health Freedom USA, this is still an issue that, for the most part, people are ignorant of. And that's what makes it so dangerous, and that's why I'm glad you mentioned these rallies that are taking place all over the United States tomorrow to make people aware of this, because as far as I'm concerned, you're well aware of what the food industry and Big Pharma have done with the foods, with all the chemicals and pesticides, et cetera. But this GMO situation with Monsanto and the corporate elite that are doing this to me is the most insidious part of what they're doing to corrupt and toxify our food system. And the bottom line is this, and this is the main point I want to make, that people need to understand. Alex has pointed this out very succinctly in his documentary Endgame. This is about eugenics. This is about a group of people, and they're just a handful, that want to exterminate us all. And, of course, one of the main ways they're trying to do this is through what is our most essential element other than water and air, and that's the food supply, because we can't live without food, and they know this. And so what they're doing is they're trying to basically alter what our Creator gave us that will benefit us in order to make us sick and weak to the point where we can't fight back, and eventually we all just die off.
You got it. Yeah, Stephen. I think you're right on. I think you're right on with the point there. I get your drift, and I think you're right on. The food supply is becoming a source of poison for the people, and this is something that we have to overcome if we're going to have a future. You made a lot of really great points there. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But it's true that the water's already poisoned with the fluoride. We know that. The vaccines have their own whole story of what's in there, what kind of poisons and toxic chemicals are in there. And now we have the GMOs. And I when I was on Alex's show last week, I mentioned some of the same things. I said, look, the GMOs, these are the Fukushima catastrophe of modern agriculture. If you think Fukushima is bad and how it's impacting the food and causing the radioactive contamination of vegetables over 100 miles away from the nuclear facility, then you just wait. You just wait until these GMOs get out of control and you have a global food supply that is wiped out, or you have a crash in one kind of crop. What if all the GMO corn fails one year because of the monoculture activities that go on, because it doesn't have genetic diversity, because it has vulnerability to a specific type of insect or type of mold or fungus or bacteria? What happens when that fails us and then the farmers are left with no seeds, because you can't save seeds year after year due to the seed termination technology that they're building into these GMOs, because they want the farmers to buy the seeds year after year from the same wealthy, influential corporations? This is just a travesty, and it threatens the future of life on our planet. You're exactly right about that, Stephen. Thank you for your call. Larry from Louisiana, you're on the air here on the Alex Jones Show.
Yeah. Didn't I just see it snowing over in Japan there recently since that reactor went up?
Well, I don't know, but as far as the weather's going, there's yellow rain falling out of the sky, and that's scary enough for me. Do you have a question?
Yeah, but that's what I was wondering. Snowing season and pollen season ain't at the same time. So how are you getting pollen if it's snowing?
That's exactly right. Well, when you start breaking down the logic behind some of these excuses that were being given by the Japanese government, they don't really make any sense. That's the truth behind many of the stories that were told today by the mainstream media as well. So I'm glad you pointed out that discrepancy in the report. Yeah, they've been talking about people out in the cold out there. They don't have any warmth because their homes are gone from the tsunami. So how is it pollen season out there? Not sure about that one. Christopher from Alabama, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Doing today?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
I'm always fabulous. Real quick, are you familiar with a disease called PKU?
Yes, I am.
Okay, well, just real quick about GMOs. I have twins that have that very rare disease called PKU. Well, they'll never eat protein the rest of their life. No milk, no chicken, no cheese, no fish, no birthday cake, no ice cream, no nothing. And as you know, if they take in protein, their body can't break it down. It goes to the brain and causes extreme mental retardation. A very unique thing happened with them when they got to be about 3 or 4 years old. They started eating real fruits and vegetables. And their levels went off the chart. And their doctors accused us of giving them protein. And come to find out what had happened, we had given them fruits and vegetables that had been genetically modified. And they had a pig gene in the tomatoes, the watermelon, that made their levels go off the chart.
Wow, okay. That's a very disturbing report. I'm glad you shared that with us, Christopher. Thanks for doing that. Yeah, it's true. I mean, your children can't even touch MSG or free glutamate in any form, including yeast extract, which is a very common ingredient used in foods. I'm sorry to hear that they got a hold of some genetically modified foods. But I'm sure the reason you mentioned that is because it's important to point out what happens on our planet when you start combining animal genes with plant seeds. This is completely unnatural. It's a violation of natural law. Some would say a violation of God and Mother Nature as well. This is not the way to run the future of our world, by playing God and Frankenstein with all these seeds. We are headed for disaster on the agricultural front, I believe, if we continue down this path of GMOs. Thank you for your call. We have Rob from Illinois. Oh, Rob, I'm sorry. We got to take a break. All right, here on the Alex Jones Show, we're going to come back from this break and continue a call with Rob and wrap up the segment of what we've talked about today. This is Mike Adams filling in for Alex Jones today on the Alex Jones Show. Talk to you soon. Welcome back to the Alex Jones Show on this Friday. We are having a great time here taking some calls about issues, GMOs, the Fukushima nuclear power plant catastrophe situation. I'm filling in for Alex today. My name's Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Now, when we left before the break, we were about to bring in Rob from Illinois. Go ahead, Rob. You're on the air.
Thank you, Mike. You're doing a great job. I just wanted to point out that about the middle of last year, the Carlyle Group, which is a Bilderberg Group member, and they bought the largest vitamin and health food supplement the parent company of the largest vitamin and health food supplement company in the country. And I'm curious as to whether they may try to introduce some GMOs into the vitamin and health food supply, and I wanted to get your take on that.
Well, currently, the USDA organic label does not allow GMOs to be used. In fact, the organic definition does not allow GMOs to be used in any kind of nutritional supplements or foods. So that's currently a good protection for us, but that's always under attack. And that's why it's so important to join these protests and get out there and be part of these groups. Everybody from Jeffrey Smith at the Institute for Responsible Technology to even the Organic Consumers Association is involved in this. It's important to keep on protesting and pushing for GMOs to be out of the foods and protected, especially out of organics. Did you have a follow-up question there, Rob?
Well, I was just wondering if maybe they might try to go on and dissolve the vitamin world that they bought. You know, either that or some way attack the vitamin industry by now owning it.
Well, my sense is that these very powerful global corporations, they do know that there's money to be made in supplements. A lot of the more popular common vitamins on the shelves, the low-quality stuff, is really manufactured by what are essentially pharmaceutical companies. And they use a lot of synthetic vitamins in those. I'm talking about the low-cost, low-quality stuff that you find at everyday stores. But the good side of the industry is the very high-end, very high-quality nutritional supplement companies, which tend to be smaller. And they're doing a great job out there, and I know that you'll continue to support those companies because they're bringing us really important nutrition that we need to help us prevent chronic degenerative disease. Nutrition really does work to do that. We still have a little bit of time. Thank you for your call, Rob. I really appreciate it. Vin from Arizona, please go ahead with your question.
Hi, Mike. Can you hear me all right?
I can. Go ahead. Yeah.
Just bridging off what you guys were just talking about, the nutritional deficiency in this country is hitting an all-time high. And one of the studies that I found from a Southern California school was measuring vitamin C content in oranges. And they were going after big distributors who were apparently keeping oranges in their warehouses for months. And they were sitting there, picked off trees, ripe. The peel was completely green. When it was time to ship them out to the stores, they dyed the outside of the peel's orange and shipped them out as fresh. People go home and buy these. These schools are testing these oranges, finding zero vitamin C content.
Yeah, Vin.
So you want to know why these companies are buying up these vitamin supplements and whatnot? Because we are going to have to be dependent on those supplements.
That's
the nutritional value of our food.
I think there's an effort, Vin, to actually lower the nutritional value of our food. The same thing happens with tomatoes. You make a really good point. They say that you're buying tomatoes that are ripened on the vine, but what they don't tell you is they cut the vine off, too. And then just leave the tomatoes attached to the vine. They don't tell you that they use synthetic gas chemicals to ripen bananas in the warehouses before they ship them out to the grocery stores as well. So there's all kinds of stuff like this going on. I hope maybe we get a chance to come back and talk about what's really in your food on a future episode, depending on Alex's schedule. I mean, there's so much you need to know about what's in your food and what's not in your food. It would absolutely shock you. We'll get to that now. The rebroadcast of this show begins in just a couple of minutes here on the other side of this break. I want to thank you all for joining me today and allowing me to sit in here for Alex Jones. The rebroadcast includes Paul Joseph Watson, Christopher Busby, and of course, Phil Moffitt, the gubernatorial candidate for Kentucky. Thanks for joining us today here on the Alex Jones Show, and I look forward to joining you again in the future. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Take care.